Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Darren, I thought it was an interesting story they weaved throughout the show with Cody Rhodes. An interesting choice to create the sense of doubt for the better part of 3 hours that Cody would even be at Night of Champions, counting on people sticking around to the very end for, you know, Papa Triple H to show up and hear Cody out, pat him on the leg, pat him on the shoulder, and concede that there's not much he can do to stop Cody when Cody's determined to fight no matter what his injury was, despite being attacked by Brock Lesnar a couple of times, including snapping his arm with a Kimura lock, and Cody then refusing to see doctors, and with the idea being the doctors would rule him out medically. What did you think of this approach? It's novel, it's different, and generally I like that. I like when the format of the show is shaken up a little bit, because sometimes, you know, things can seem sort of predictable and formulaic, like literally formulaic sometimes in how they do things, and this was a bit different.
Yeah, I thought it was good to have like a show-long thing like that, and you figured when they started the show that they would come back to them and that wouldn't be the end of it, and sure enough, they came back to it 2 or 3 times, so that was good. And there's someone to see the doubt. I'm leaning towards Brock losing in this because it was so strong that, oh, Cody's got no chance. So I think it's kind of leaning toward Lesnar doing another job, and this is the reason why. But one thing I would be cautious about is just leaning too much into Cody being the toughest guy in the world, that even Triple H, the former toughest guy in the world, is, you know, couldn't even talk him into getting help and doing the right thing because he's just so determined. I think that's another thing with Cody that they need to be cautious about, is just leaning too much into that. And they were right on the borderline of that, at least I thought tonight. But
Jared, elaborate on that. Why is it dangerous? What do you think their reason is for doing it? And what is the upside that keeps you from just condemning it as like this awful, bad decision?
I think they're doing it just to kind of make Cody the Superman. And apparently that's the guy that they want to go with. And kind of like, he's just the most determined guy. There's nothing you can do to keep him down. And they want to keep telling that story. It seems kind of like going back to the pec injury that he had. And now this, he's a guy that overcomes everything. And that seems to be the story they want to tell. The danger is that once you force feed too much stuff, fans start getting a little bit tired of that, and that's what I'm a little bit cautious about, kind of like what happened in AEW. You don't want to force it too much because the fans will turn. They're not at that point right now, but down the line, a couple more angles like this, and it's like, okay, we get it. Cody's the toughest guy in the world. We get it. And you don't want to keep going to that well too much, I think.
Yeah, no, I think those are that's a reasonable concern to have at this point, because it can come across as heavy-handed. Okay, we get it. Cody's tough. And, you know, do you have to keep hitting us over the head with this this notion that he's tough? That said, he's going in against Brock, and maybe now you said you think that maybe this is an indication Brock is doing the job. What if this is an indication that they're trying to set up Cody for an excuse for losing, that he went into a match he shouldn't have gone in on, that he shouldn't have agreed to because he got hurt. And he ultimately does have to tap out to an arm bar. The ref maybe calls for the bell when Lesnar has Cody's arm and he snaps it and Cody still won't tap. And they tell that story and the ref stops the match. And then that sets up a rematch to keep this feud going. Is that part of the, is that a possibility, a distinct possibility, or what is your scenario that you think is more likely, if not?
Yeah, that did cross my mind because this certainly gives him a storyline out of why he's going to be losing that second match, and it wouldn't take too much luster off of him losing, of course, to Brock Lesnar, which, you know, there's no shame in that in storyline. So this would give him an out if they do decide to go that route and make it a three-match series. So that would work. But I have to say, they've done a good job of, you know, Brock Lesnar was a little, you know, becoming a little bit mundane. And they've done a good job of showing him as a killer and like, oh, yeah, don't forget this guy, you know, he can take somebody out just like that. And they've done a good job of reminding people that because he was a little bit flat there for a while. So they've done a good job of rehabbing him.
What do you think of this use of Triple H making, you know, occasional appearances? He did for the draft. He's here as sort of the, you know, the father figure like he was in NXT. Triple H like 53, Cody's late 30s. So it's kind of more of a big brother than a father figure to Cody compared to some of the 20-year-olds that he was overseeing in NXT. Is this a good role for Triple H? And does it put a superstar but also babyface authority figure on camera in an appropriate way that offsets a little bit the baggage that comes with you know, Vince McMahon's return?
I think it's good because I use him sparingly and it's not hitting you over the head. It's, you know, when Triple H shows up, it's usually for a good reason, adds a little bit of something to the segment. So when he shows up at the end trying to talk Cody out of it, it gives it a little more meaning. And I think that's a good thing. And him becoming kind of the ultimate authority, you know, above like Pierce, I think that's good. Kind of, you know, making you forget about Vince and all the baggage that comes along with that. Triple H is pretty well liked at this point. So it's good. And they use him sparingly. And I like that. It's not overdone. He's not there every week. Just making tag team matches and stuff, you know, like Teddy Long or whatever. So, yeah, I like this use of him.
Yeah, very good. Lesnar is, this is what I'm going to say, is Lesnar is really fun in this heel role too. I like him. I'm thinking back to his golly gee, ah, shucks babyface run that, you know, was relatively short-lived, and he's not all that different. It just sort of feels like this is the real him, and the other him was not like disingenuous, but sort of like I'm kind of happy-go-lucky, but I'm not like going to pander to fans. I'm not like, you know, I'm not going to be a traditional babyface. And deep down, I am this, you know, the scorpion and the snake. This is who I am. Are you enjoying version of Lesnar? Sort of, you know, we still don't know, you know, for sure what's driving this. Paul Heyman in the opening promo said this was not something I was part of or knew was coming. But, you know, heels lie, and there could be some, you know, trickery with the words. But so maybe ultimately there will be a tie-in with Heyman and Lesnar. Maybe they're just keeping the door open to that and they're feeling their way through it. But what do you think about this version of Lesnar, obviously firmly as the heel, the way he's going after Cody?
Yeah, I like it. It's a playoff of the prior role that he had, but with a little more intensity, and he still has the kind of little comic touches, but it's a little more sharp, kind of like he's referenced Cody's catchphrase, "What do you want to talk about tonight?" thing. This is the second time he's did that, and it's kind of getting a little dig in at him. So he's still having fun, but it's got a little meanness attached to it. And I like that edge they add to it. So it's not a complete departure from what he was doing, but it's just like, you know, I can turn this up at any minute and don't you forget about it. So, you know, don't cross me. Yeah, I can have fun, but, you know, I'm also, you know, had this whole violent streak. So don't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Very good. Well, let's pause and introduce ourselves, give out the phone numbers and email, and then get on with the show. We're expecting a couple on-site correspondents. We've got callers lining up already, and a lot more to talk about on this show, including, I think, some compelling sit-down interviews with Seth Rollins, who I think they did an effective job establishing that this world title run, if Seth wins it, could be pretty special. First introduction. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 22nd, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. And also our website, pwtorch.com, which we launched in 1999. And also the host of various podcasts, including some VIP exclusives like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich and Wade, Wade Keller Hotline, which I posted recorded one late last night with the latest on the CM Punk AEW situation. a pivotal week for AEW's future. And, the course will be set for this new Saturday show based on what is announced by Tony Khan Wednesday. Maybe we'll find out something sooner in terms of, the status of CM Punk. But a fascinating story. I cover that, including what I was hearing from people I talk with in AEW and also WWE and outside of AEW about how they feel about this latest twist with Punk. So if you're not a VIP member, you're missing out on a lot, including, by the way, coming up this weekend, two premium live event pay-per-view post-event roundtables. That'll be just for VIP members, one Saturday late afternoon after Night of Champions, the other one that I'll be hosting after AEW's Double or Nothing pay-per-view. We'll also have coverage, of course, of NXT. And Darren, Impact has a special on Friday. Are you covering that?
I will actually be in Las Vegas, so I believe John Laszlo will be taking care of
Excellent.
That.
Excellent. That's why I asked, yeah. So we'll have coverage of that. We'll encourage everybody to check out our written reports at pwtorch.com. And then the other voice you just heard and you've heard so far on the show is Darren Lilly. He covers Impact for PW Torch, and he and John have a VIP-exclusive Impact podcast. That's one of many perks. I'm part of a lot of podcasts, but we have a lot of podcasts for VIP members that I'm not part of, too. You can get details at pwtorch.com/govip. It's a pretty amazing way to sign up because not only do you get new content every day that's VIP exclusive, you get these free podcasts with the ads and plugs edited out. You also get access to 20-plus years of our podcast library. Throughout the week, we add to our podcast feed not only new shows but also the 18th anniversary date, roughly, are some of our earliest podcasts, including our post-pay-per-view roundtables. We're marching through 2005 right now with those. And it's all automated, all part of our VIP podcast feed, which is compatible with a single click when you sign up with Apple Podcasts, thus CarPlay also. No password to enter, no special settings to go to. It's a really slick setup that we have. It's just turnkey, low friction. Use whatever term you want to use to describe how user-friendly. And it doesn't take a lot of tech savviness to get our VIP podcast up and running when you sign up. So check out details. You can also sign up through Patreon, and you can also get VIP podcasts directly through your Apple podcast app using your Apple account. That's all explained with directions at pwtorch.com/govip. All right, so enough of that. Let's, Darren, get moving with the rest of the show, and we encourage you to join us via phone call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, that flags you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be on the program. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We've got some good emails coming up later. Some emails on Cody and Brock, including one subject line is dumb babyface problem. And then also some thoughts on what Seth had to say. And what was the other topic? I think we have something on the Becky Trish segment, too, that I've already glanced at. So some good emails coming up. But first things first, we want to talk with you, our listeners, via phone call first. And we got a bunch of people on hold, so we'll start with area code 717, which I believe is Wyoming. 717, go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, it's Mike from Hershey. How you doing?
Oh, hey, Mike. Yeah, you threw me off with your number. Good to talk to you.
cool.
Where is 717? Where is 717?
717 is central Pennsylvania. It's literally Hershey, Pennsylvania. I live 4 minutes from the Giant Center where Raw was tonight.
Oh, cool.
So
awesome.
Yeah,
well, I'm glad we
I'm literally
with, with your
yeah. Cool. I'm pulling in my driveway right now and letting my 12-year-old son out of the car. He just wants to say hi quick.
Yeah, for sure.
Hi.
Hey, what's your name?
Stone Parker.
His name's Stone.
And awesome. And what thumbs up, thumbs down? What do you think of the show?
The show was great. It was really entertaining. It was interesting to see what happened with Brock and Cody and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what you'll remember about this years from now?
Thanks,
yeah,
buddy.
Cool.
He's got to go to bed, Wade. But I'm yeah. just I'm going to let him go and just chat with you for a few minutes, if that's cool. Really appreciate it. Longtime listener of the podcast. Just never felt inspired to call in before so much, except that we had, you know, we get raw in our backyard every once in a while, and this is the first time in a few years. So here we are.
Well, that's awesome. So have you taken your son to shows before?
Yeah, we've been to pretty much go to every house show, and we went to SmackDown earlier this year, which is kind of leads me to how we got there tonight. You know, when we were at SmackDown, it was actually the last time SmackDown was here. You know, they had a pre-sale. They announced a pre-sale during the show, and we looked up some tickets, and they were literally like $20 for like really good seats. But we were with a larger group, and we couldn't decide as a group if we were going to, you know, buy them. So we held off for a while. I ended up buying them last minute today because both my kids play sports, and we had a free night. So we ended up over there watching Raw tonight, and it was a good show. But you know what? You guys say it all the time. I hear it from your callers. House shows are a little bit more enjoyable for the family. You know, we had a good time tonight, but man, there's a lot of sitting around and waiting and watching videos, you know, on the big screen.
I was going to bring that up with you, Mike, and it's great to talk to you, by the way. I appreciate you helping us out today, and I definitely recognize your name from supporting the Torch over the years. I was wondering about that tonight, because this felt pretty heavy on how many times you had to turn and look at the screen or the scoreboard to see what they were playing instead of stuff happening in the ring. And I liked the content. I liked the backstage stuff with the backstage interviews and the Cody Triple H segment. I liked the Seth sit-down interviews, you know, the AJ Styles video. But it's a lot when you pay to go to a show. You know, you're not paying to watch a big screen. How much did it push it for you in terms of the gaps between things happening actually in person in the ring?
Well, the two biggest takeaways from tonight were, first of all, I know you always want to ask a couple of questions when I listen. And Wade, I've literally been listening to your podcast for probably about 10 years now, and this is the first time I've ever called in. I literally built a house listening to your podcast. So I've been up on a ladder. I've been, you know, in a basement, all sorts of, you know, hours and hours of listening to the Torch, but I never actually called in before. So this is pretty cool. But, you know, so
I'll
start with a couple of notes that I have. First of all, the biggest pop tonight was for Brock Lesnar. That was just star power right there. Brock was huge. Becky Lynch, a close second, and probably a close third, and this is kind of has to do with the fact that it was the first match of the night. There were a couple of dark matches, or I should say main event matches. So Dana Brooke was the first person to appear, and she got a major pop, I think, just because people were excited to see someone, you know, come out for the night. That was around 7:30 tonight. The biggest disappointments of the night, no Seth Rollins live, although he was promoted twice during the show on the big screen as coming up next, we'll hear from Seth Rollins. And then we sat through video packages of Seth Rollins, which were good, but he wasn't live in the arena. And number two, we didn't get the Cody Rhodes theme song experience. We got Cody getting his butt kicked in the middle of the ring.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. Those are things. Yeah, I mean, the ring entrances are such a big part of both Seth and Cody's acts. And when you go to a show, part of what you want is that experience. I mean, it's not like, you know, sometimes you go to a rock concert and it's like, okay, this band better play their, you know, the biggest hits off their current album. And of course they do. And then you want to hear some classics. Wrestling is, you know, it's mostly about the in-ring fighting, but the ring entrances are a big part of it. And that's, I wonder how much they think about that and try not to let fans down, like missing out on both of those, which are both big things right now in WWE.
So that was the biggest disappointment. The show started off really hot. It started off with a video package with Cody being beat up by Brock with being smashed with a keg, which was kind of funny. And we appreciated that. Hershey and Hershey and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, are really big beer towns, so we appreciated seeing someone get beat up with a keg. That was cool. But when Cody came out, there was no theme music. We were waiting. You know, everybody around us was sort of like, you know, we even thought maybe after the beatdown, like during the commercial, like we'd get at least like his theme music that everybody could kind of sing along. We didn't get that. And the same thing with Seth. It was just, they promoted Seth being there. Like, we'll hear from Seth Rollins coming up next, but we didn't get him live. So we got the video package. So between not having Cody and Seth there, it was pretty clear. I mean, Becky Lynch, that was big star power, and obviously having Brock in the arena. There was actually some talk. No one was really sure if Cody and, you know, being beat up by Brock backstage was even going to be, was actually like live. We thought maybe, well, that could have been recorded, but then Brock around 9 o'clock, they came out live. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good thought to have. I mean, we're like, wait, are they even in the building or did they just tape this and
right.
we're not even going to
yeah.
see them in person? Yeah.
Yeah. So those were disappointing moments. But besides that,
yeah,
we did have a good, we had a good time. And then the seating attendance, you know, attendance was, I would say, I mean, it had to be pretty darn close to sold out, obviously, except for the screen behind the area behind the screen, which cuts off maybe, about 1/6 of the arena. Other than that, the floor was packed. You know, we were in a higher section. It's about a 10,000 seat arena. You know, it's a hockey rink. We actually have the Hershey Bears in the AHL playoffs right now. So it's a pretty busy place. When you go to a hockey game right now, you've got about maybe 6,000 people. It was a pretty good crowd because minor league hockey is kind of hard to sell playoffs for, but it's really popular around here. This was one of the biggest crowds I've ever seen, you know, at the Giant Center in Hershey. So good show.
Did you sense any restlessness during the video packages among the fans where, like, you know, just kind of rustling or impatience or anything like that?
There was a couple of families, you know, mostly families where we were. And, you know, my son, he's a good gauge because this is a lot of times when I'm listening to your show, I think in my mind, like, because I'm 44. OK, so I'm a true child. I was in college when the Attitude Era was going on. Here I am now. I've got a 12-year-old son who loves WWE. He sees things a lot differently than me. So, you know, sometimes he's a, he's a good gauge of where things are at. He was super disappointed that we didn't get like the, you know, actually got Seth Rollins in person. Although we've seen him before. A lot of times we get these super shows or like these holiday tours in Hershey, but we don't get Raw or SmackDown. And, you know, last time around, I think at the end of it was the last time that WWE was here, we got like a Seth Rollins versus Austin Theory steel cage match, and everybody sat there and Seth Rollins won, and he sat on top of the cage and everybody sang Seth Rollins' song for like 10 minutes.
Yeah,
and it was a big moment, and like my son remembered that and he was looking forward to doing it again. We didn't get to do that tonight. So other than that, restlessness, I would say it was pretty clear where commercials were. There was a lot of lull in the action. The wrestlers were clearly taking some time off, and you know, Finn Balor, for instance, playing to the crowd a lot, raising his hands, kind of like, you know, way too long for if it would have been on TV. Rest holds, things like that, headlocks. All in all, not a disappointing night whatsoever. Definitely worth the money, and we would go every time. So,
how was the pop for Sami Zayn compared to maybe your own expectations and compared to other baby faces on the card? Because certainly, you know, 4 months ago, Sami would have been off the charts.
That's a good question because
Sammy is still really popular, but the way that it's set up right now, so Kevin Owens comes out, and he gets the initial, you know, you hear his music play, and everybody's pumped up, and they get Kevin Owens, and then you know that Sammy's right behind him, because the way that they're kind of splitting up their entrance with both of their music. So KO comes out, and you get this, you sort of get this initial pop, and then Sammy comes out, and you get this even amplified pop, and everybody starts singing his song. But I will say that Matt Riddle was really sort of the three. I kind of got the feeling tonight that maybe given the Imperium matchup that there's more things in line for Riddle, and I wouldn't have seen this coming, but I think that maybe Riddle is an opponent for Gunther coming out of this. The way that they set things up, it just sort of seemed like they kept Sammy and KO sort of separate. They're their own stars, and then they were really having Riddle come out as sort of a hero to save them. And he was the one who seemed to get a lot of, you know, big spots with Gunther. So coming out of tonight, I would kind of project that maybe that's a matchup that we could look forward to.
Let me throw to Darren Lilly, our co-host today, for his question for you.
Yeah, Mike, who would you talked about who got the biggest reaction coming out, but who got the most heel heat?
So definitely, and I think you could probably guess this too, but man, the place was fired up for Dominic tonight. So he appeared early in a video package, and I think it was Apollo Crews, right? So Apollo Crews was his opponent. They had a backstage segment with Apollo, and then they were just talking to Apollo, and then all of a sudden Dominic interrupts, and the whole place just, you know, roars of boos. It was great. And then later in the night when they actually came out, it was huge. There was actually, this is kind of interesting, there were some chants of Let's Go Dom Dom, which never really took off throughout the whole arena, but they were there. And then there was We Want Mommy chants. So it's really kind of a cool dynamic. Dominic, I don't think it did any favors for Apollo tonight, but Dominic and Rhea are super over, and they drew tons of heat. And also Trish Stratus. Trish, who I'm a big fan of, obviously being an Attitude Era kid, basically. I was pretty excited to see Trish. I guess I can't remember seeing her live before. She was pretty – she got a lot of what – she was the only person who drew what chants, and it was almost as if she was welcoming them. Like, she – the way she went, it's almost like she could have stopped it, but she just kept saying it, her lines she would get the whats.
What was there anything about or was there any point in the Trish promo where you had trouble hearing her? Because she does tend to soft talk at times, besides her cadence during what chants. Was that an issue at all that you noted?
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that before, and I've definitely kind of seen it. In the arena tonight, it was all Trish. You know, Becky came out. She sat down. I think she signed the contract immediately and kicked her legs up, and everybody was pretty hyped about her. And then Trish came out. It was a pretty big reaction for Trish. But then she started talking. You could hear what she said, but it was almost like it didn't matter what she said. Everyone was just waiting for her to end so that they could say what again, and it just got louder and louder. And again, she probably could have just kind of cut that off. And it's almost like it's almost like that's the best reaction she's going to get. So she just kept going with it. So now it wasn't hard to hear her. She was kind of going through the lines, though.
Yeah. Yep. Darren, go ahead. I think you're going to jump in with another topic.
I was just going to ask, just on a fun note, who was your son's favorite, and how did he react when that person came out?
My son is actually when we watched WrestleMania, I'll tell you this much. I'm actually one of those guys who fell in line with thinking that Cody should have won WrestleMania. And I was pretty, we're kind of a torn household. My son is a huge Roman fan, and always has been. So that's the one thing that I will tell you guys that I've had a hard time when I listen to the show and I hear 40-year-old guys like myself frustrated with Roman Reigns. I can tell you that since my son's been 5 years old, I think is probably when I can remember him. You know, we watch every big wrestling show. My son has always loved Roman Reigns, and he's bought it hook, line, and sinker since the beginning. He still loves him. He loves the whole bloodline. I have a 14-year-old daughter. She loves the bloodline, and my daughter doesn't think wrestling is cool. She still loves the bloodline. So, you know, I can say that I'm kind of turning my son onto the Cody wagon, but he was not. He wanted to see Cody. He realizes he's a big star. It's kind of like when the house shows would come around here and Roman wasn't on them, and then finally we got to see Roman. It was like a huge deal for him. Tonight he was really looking forward to seeing Cody, and we did see Cody, but we didn't get his entrance. So it was sort of disappointing. So I would say my son's favorite, to answer your question, Darren, would be he loved seeing Brock. He thinks Brock is Brock's just a major star. And besides that, I think he was pretty pumped up. He was actually hoping to see Braun Strowman after we saw Ricochet came out solo tonight.
Yeah,
he was kind of thinking Braun would be with him, and we didn't get Braun. But from a 12-year-old's mind, those big guys, man, they really do. You know, they are larger than life. So.
For the segment that were not like the top segments, did they lose the crowd at any point? For instance, the Ricochet Bronson Reed match. Bronson's, you know, relatively new. Zoe Stark, relatively new against Candice. Shinsuke Balor, like you said, maybe the commercial was a little slow. Raquel Sonia was a pretty quick match. It would be tough for people to get bored during that. But he also had Dominik and Cruz as sort of an impromptu match. Did any of those jump out as having trouble keeping the crowd engaged, or maybe people getting up from their seats?
I would say the coldest match was Candice LeRae. Everything else that you mentioned, Bronson Reed, people really appreciate it. I think we got a "This is awesome" chant during Bronson Reed. People like him. I think the one thing that there was a guy next to me. I have no idea who he was, but he was a cool guy. We were just kind of like chatting. You know, he said he was kind of like projecting stuff, like talking. He'd be like, "Watch this," you know. The one thing he mentioned that I had seen but I hadn't really thought about, and I kind of told my son too, is he's like, when Bronson Reed jumps up on the top rope, he's like, he doesn't stand up there and showboat or waste any time. He sort of goes up to the top rope and then he just like immediately dives off really quick. And that's kind of interesting. Like, that's kind of a cool way to do that. You know, you don't get up there and, you know, showboat up on the top rope and Jimmy Snuka signs, and then 5 seconds later jump on the guy, and he's like, Bronson Reed gets on the top rope and dives off really quick and nails the guy. And that Bronson's move was really over. So that was cool. Finn Balor, Damian Priest is pretty over. He was out there. He was ringside. People enjoyed him. The Viking Raiders match, I would say, was fun. I mean, people enjoyed it, but I did see a lot of people get up. But I will say this. When Candice LeRae came out, she came out, I think, before a commercial, so we didn't know who she was going to wrestle, and she ended up wrestling, you said, Zoe Stark. That was, like, visibly where people got up out of their seats and went to get, like, their first round of concessions and go to the bathroom and stuff. Yeah.
Very good. Darren, anything else you want to bring up?
No, that was pretty much all I had.
Yeah. How about you, Mike? Anything else you want to share? Anything maybe off air, before, after the show? I know you already talked a little bit about that, but anything else you want to bring up before we let you go?
No, there was two main event matches. That was the only thing I mentioned was Dana Brooke versus I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time remembering who that was. I took a note down, but I can't look. It was she just came back to Raw. What was her name? I have I wrote it down here, guys. Doesn't really, I guess it's not the most. Oh, here it is. It was Dana Brooke versus Tegan Knox and Nikki Cross versus Emma. Those were the main event matches.
Ah, okay.
They took place before the show. And then after the show, there was just a little bit of a scuffle between Imperium came back out and scuffled with KO and Sammy to kind of let us go. So anyway, that was it, man. I've been on a lot longer than I thought I would. I really appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah.
It's fun talking to you.
Sure thing, Mike. I appreciate it. Call again. And yeah, don't be a stranger.
Thanks, Wade. Thanks, Darren.
Absolutely. I'm glad. I hope the house is better because you listen to my voice and the Torch team voice while building your house. Hope it helps
listen,
build a good house.
There's one confession I have to make. You guys, the Todd Martin drives me nuts. Todd Martin's opinion. Sometimes I can't stand listening to Todd. So I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but I'm just being honest with you. I know that when you tout the VIP membership, a lot of times you're like, because we got these shows with Todd's opinion drives me nuts. So my favorites are Greg Parks. I love the Intercontinental show with Nick and Tom, and I love the AEW after show guys. Todd drives me nuts, though. I got to tell you, man. Maybe it's because I'm a WWE homer or in some sense, but he's so negative. He was so negative for the past few years. He just, man, when I hear that guy, he drives me crazy. So maybe that's what he's supposed to do. It must be some good heel heat.
Mike, we get that all the time. Just we hear that about Todd all the time. There's just, I don't know if there's anything we can do about it. Well, you can listen to the more AEW theme shows. You can listen to the mailbag, which doesn't always hit those topics, and get a ton of compelling and book reviews too, but a ton of compelling insights from Todd, even if his WWE stance bothers you. But I appreciate the feedback, and obviously we have a variety of shows for and with the idea being there are people like you out there, Mike, I am fans of Mike and Andrew and Nick and Tom. And I mean, it's great having so many diverse voices with definitely like you say, you know, sometimes you watch with your son and you're like, I see things through different lens because now he's a fan and there are different lenses to, in terms of what people appreciate and prioritize in terms of what makes them a fan.
The good news is, Wade, I'll listen anyway, even if I don't like it. So good news, man.
cool. I love it.
All right
Mike, thanks. Yeah, well, hopefully talk to you soon. I was hoping Mike would say goodbye.
I think he did.
Are you there, Darren, or did my
internet? I'm here.
Hello, Darren?
Hello.
I don't know what's going on now. Darren, can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Solve this. My headset? Maybe my headset went out. I don't know what's going on. Well, let me test a caller here. Let's try Brad in Florida. Brad, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, do you hear me?
Hello, Brad. Can you hear me? Well, I don't know what's going on.
I hear you perfect.
Can't remember this happening. Not like this. I'll try calling back in. All right, so I have called into the show. I appreciate everybody who hung on through a technical issue, which I'm still having. Suddenly my headphones went out. So I think you guys might have been able to hear me, but I couldn't hear you. So hang tight if you're on hold and listening to the show. And I'm going to try one other attempt to get in here, but I want to make sure. Let's just see if Sean can hear me at this point. Sean, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you, Wade. I hear you.
Okay, and could you hear me when I was, like, trying to figure out what was going wrong?
Yeah, we could hear you. You just couldn't hear us.
Yeah. So hold tight, everybody. Give me a minute. I'm going to try to get connected with a better microphone here, and then I'll be back. So just hold tight, everybody. All right. I restarted the computer, and now I believe we're back. So I'm just reconnecting Darren. Hey, Darren.
Hello.
All right. So I had to restart my computer. This hasn't happened much over the years where I couldn't change the settings without just rebooting everything, but got things back. So let's just continue on with the show. It was an unceremonious end to Mike from Hershey's debut call, since I couldn't hear him talking because my headset went out, but he probably was saying things like, I can hear you. All right. So let's roll through our calls here and go to we will go to Brad from Florida next. Brad, thanks for holding through all that. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. So I'm glad all the technical things are fixed. You know, like Sean said, we could hear you perfectly, but I think we're good. And I guess my biggest thing, again, like I don't want to be repetitive every week, but if we're going to have Imperium be the main event and have that main event feel to them, they can't keep losing like this, man. It just can't happen. I think I would love to see Vinci and Kaiser in a match with people like Alpha Academy or like the Viking Raiders or whatever it is, because I don't think you can give them this big feel when they never win ever. And they're just really like jobbers at this point. And it's very unfortunate because when they came out with the Sammy and KO segment at the beginning, it didn't feel to me like, oh, wow, this is a threat. You know, this is a big team. Now Gunther does, but his group does not. Very different from, you know, Roman with the Usos or even, you know, Sammy and KO with Riddle. I mean, it just feels like these two that are with Gunther are not important. And it's really unfortunate because I think they're great talents. And that's really starting to bother me. And I don't want to understand, like, why is Triple H not booking them stronger if they're going to be a cornerstone of Raw, which it looks like they're going to have to be by default, because there doesn't seem to be much else there, you know?
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair comment. I've had the same concern about Vinci and Kaiser. Darren, do you think it's okay or it's a problem? Either way, is it fixable? What's your take on that?
It's something that surprised me after the brand split, because with Imperium coming to Raw, I was like, well, they're going to be one of the main powerhouses, and I thought they would be so dominant, and here they've eaten two big losses to Sammy and KO. If I'm not mistaken, it's just been those two losses, and have not looked impressive. I'm very surprised. There's still a chance to rebound, but I thought they were going to be like one of the cornerstones, and it is not going that way at all. But they've got time to salvage it, but they might want to hop right on that before that image of them as jobbers is ingrained in people's minds.
Yeah, I would like to see them get some dominant wins and, you know, find some teams where they feel they can sacrifice them. Da Vinci and Kaiser just win a quick match like Raquel did tonight over Sonya Deville. Just show off their finishers being effective. I think that can go a long way to patching up what does make them feel like they're, you know, inferior partners to Gunther. I'm not saying it drags Gunther down, but it certainly doesn't help him to have like really highly skilled wrestlers. They're great to watch, but they don't have the credibility of being, you know, tough, badass threats to championships. Brad, what else?
Yeah, like I couldn't even tell you what Vinci or Kaiser's finishing move is because I've never seen it. You know what I mean? Like, it's that bad. And I just very concerning to me. And the roster for Raw after the draft, it's feeling very thin to me. I don't know if tonight was a special circumstance because just like Seth wasn't there or whatever. It just feels extremely thin to me. On the women's side and the men's side, it just feels like there's not a lot there. And if you take away Sammy and KO, I mean, there really is very, very little on this roster to get excited about. I don't know why this has happened, or if maybe I'm just missing something. I mean, do you guys feel that way watching Raw, like, there's just not a lot here for them to work with? I mean, it seems like there should be because it's a three-hour show, but I don't know. I just got that feeling big time tonight.
It hasn't been anything that's crossed my mind other than the initial show post-draft where we saw some wrestlers who we just would not have seen, you know, otherwise on Raw when they were having a lot more crossover. It might be more of an issue. I think post Night of Champions, we'll kind of see, you know, what, not that they hit a reset button, but when they kind of shift away from that lineup to whatever comes next, maybe we'll see some new wrestlers getting TV time that they don't want to give a lot of TV time to right now. I don't have the Raw roster in front of me at the moment, but I don't know. For a three-hour show, it hasn't come across super, super thin to me. I mean, Darren, I'll throw it to you. What are your thoughts?
I think one of the keys to that, and I have to kind of side with Brad on this one, is I think they've been exposed after losing the bloodline off of both shows. You take the Usos off there, and I think it's left a hole, and I think that's kind of what's I think is missing, is you don't have that whole bloodline element, and the roster's a little bit exposed and thin in my point of view.
So they've got Indushir coming next week. They got a vignette on them. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler are part of the roster. I think that'll add some star power to the show. We didn't get Xavier Woods tonight, and Kofi is out injured. We didn't get anything with the Maximum Male Models or the Way, the Gargano group. But we have gotten Shinsuke added to the mix, Apollo Crews added to the mix. Riddle is back, and that's somewhat fresh. Becky was away for a while. Imperium we already talked about, but they're new to Raw. This was a Miz-free show. And I'm trying to think. Oh, JD McDonagh is someone that they've, you know, pegged as getting a push, you know, at a certain level. We didn't get Braun because he's not part of Night of Champions, but maybe he'll be back next week. I guess when I just look at the roster, and Odyssey Jones, they haven't done anything with. I think there's enough to work with where once they start focusing on some other people posting out of champions, maybe things pick up, Brad. I guess that would be my perspective. And obviously Drew McIntyre, you know, is an issue too. I think the depth
right.
of the Raw roster is hurt without him in the mix. So, you know, if they can get him back posting out of champions, maybe that'll help too.
No, you know, you're absolutely right. It's the bloodline lacking and Drew McIntyre, because the Bobby Lashley for Drew McIntyre trade was essentially the trade that happened. And now it's all coming back to me that, you know, we don't have Bobby Lashley anymore. And now we have no Drew McIntyre either. So that's definitely where it's feeling. And the Solo Sikoa and the Usos closing or opening every single show, basically. And now that not happening. So that's probably why it felt that way to me. My last thing, and I know you have other people holding like Sean, is, and by the way, Sean, great job hosting that Intercontinental Adventure, if you hear me. But my last thing is on Becky. It's really weird to me how the graphic is still, after all of these weeks and weeks and weeks when she comes out, it's still big-time Bex, which I thought was the ostentatious, overly obnoxious heel versus the man who came back who was good Becky, you know, and tough Becky and whatever. Like, I don't understand why the man is on the Tron, but big time Bex is in the air floating as she comes in. And tonight she comes in with a complete big time Bex outfit, like with the crazy sunglasses and the crazy jacket and the crazy shoes.
Boop.
Are we mixing these two? Like, why is big time Bex still a thing if she's now the man again? Like, which... I guess it's a combination, right? I guess that's what you're going to tell me, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive. You know, I think big time Bex coming out with, you know, I think when she went from heel to babyface, there was like, all right, maybe a little less bombast. And now that she's, you know, firmly opposite of Trish and established as a babyface, she's bringing some of those, you know, bombastic, outlandish traits back, but framed as a babyface. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, I think she's kind of evolved into a hybrid of the best elements of the two characters, and that's kind of what you're seeing. But, I mean, it's an excellent point that, yeah, there's a little bit of those elements in there. I mean, the glasses, you couldn't help but notice tonight, so a little bit over the top. But, yeah, I guess they're trying to, you know, give her all of her positive attributes from all the different characters, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. I love those sunglasses, or those glasses, by the way. I want to wear those to the grocery store and see what people say. Those are fun. I don't know if I'll be able to pick out, and I'll end up with groceries I didn't expect, you know, I didn't intend, because I don't think the vision's great, but it'll be worth it. Brad, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, the last thing is, and I'll be super quick, it's just an observation. Bronson Reed is awesome, man. I mean, I think he is the best acquisition that Triple H has made. I mean, when I think about, like, the OC and this and that, like, Bronson Reed, and the thing I want to say is, as he was entering the ring, they showed him in the back looking pretty cool in sunglasses, and his hair was kind of pulled back in a bun, and, you know, he looked pretty sharp, and he's talking, and I'm saying, geez, I don't even know how many times I've heard this guy talk, but he came across great, and I think they need more of that. Like, before this to me, maybe I've missed something, but Bronson Reed came across to me like a guy, just a brute that is just an animal that you never hear talk, and he's just vicious, and he's just a killer, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, another vicious killer on the roster. But when you hear him talk and you give a personality to who he is, it gets a little bit more interesting. You get a little more invested in him. And I thought tonight was the best I've seen from him in that Ricochet match. He sold amazing. His moves came across great. He came across great. I just thought I think he is phenomenal. And he's someone I think is going to be a big part of this roster and probably should be. And that's all I want to say. And I want your thoughts on Bronson, and then I'll let you get on to other people. But thanks as always, guys. Darren, great to hear from you, and Wade, you as well, buddy.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it. Yeah, Darren, talk about Bronson Reed, because I'm nodding along with Brad. I mean, I his promos, whenever there's been little glimpses of them, I've been like, all right, this is something you can build on. I think he's still on a journey to find his look, his demeanor, but we're moving, I think, in a good direction. And then in the ring with Ricochet, that was a lot of fun. A very different, you know, two very different styles, but they blended well, and I'm glad, as I noted in my report at pwtorch.com, I'm glad that Bronson won, because you have to send the message to fans, like, this guy's worth investing as a potential top-tier guy, and you got to beat Ricochet if that's a message, without any asterisk next to the win. Darren, what do you think of him now?
Yeah, I think Bronson Reed is one of the guys that has benefited the most in this post-draft era. You can tell how they protect him, how they're giving him a solid win over Ricochet in a short amount of time, I would say. And they're backing it up with backstage vignettes and videos and stuff. So you can tell they're on board with it as well. And I'm pretty excited to see what they've got in store for him. I think it's going to be something big. He's a guy they're protecting, and they're looks like he's on a good path. And I'm glad to see it, because he's delivering. They're giving him the ball, and he's delivering.
Yes. All right. Our number, if you're listening to us live here, is 347-215-8558. If you want to call, you still can. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard, letting us know that you want to be on the show. All right. Up next, we'll go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and then Mike from Atlantic City. You are on deck. And then we have Ryan, our second onsite correspondent, on hold. Sean, welcome. Thanks for hanging, or being on hold for so long. What's on your mind tonight about Raw?
Well, I want to say first, of course it's not Nick and Tom. It's Nick and Sean's Intercontinental measure. Come on, guys. We all know this. No, I'm just playing. I would love it. Tom does such a good job, man. They do a good job. Darren, it's good to hear from you, man, as always. And the first thing I was going to talk about is, and it was good to hear from Mike, too, by the way, but I wanted to say, you brought up an email about the dumb baby face thing. I guess I might lead with this and kind of talk about it. As far as the Cody stuff, I thought it was really good the way they did it with Cody. I did think it was very fun. I did think it was different. It kept you, you know, wanting to watch and see what they're going to do, even though you kind of knew it was going to be at the end, like Darren was talking about. But again, I like the Cody, you know, you have the guy that wants to fight, even though he's getting beat down from behind, he's getting attacked out of nowhere. He wants to fight back. But at the same time, I think like the emailer is saying, when you come out to the ring knowing your arm is busted, you know, quote unquote, it does make you look kind of dumb because you're going to get beat up. Like, I know he's tough. I know what they're trying to portray, and I got it watching it. Like, I was invested in it. But at the same time, it does make Cody look a little bad in that situation, knowing Brock's going to attack him again, and he's going to get, you know, quote-unquote, get his arm officially broken probably. So what did you think about the whole thing again, just kind of talk about that and what you thought about Cody when he did come out after the first beatdown and coming out and getting beat down again? Because I think that is – you have to kind of watch that too a little bit.
Yeah, Darren, Cody's tough. He's not going to back down, but did he end up looking like he walked into trouble where you end up not feeling sorry for him afterwards because he should have seen what was coming?
I think he did enough there. He didn't look too stupid. I mean, but if you put any kind of analysis on it, like, of course he shouldn't have gone in. But I think people are behind him enough where it really doesn't matter right now. But again, you can't have too many more of these missteps because fans are not going to back historically a stupid baby face. So they got to be mindful of stuff like that. They're making, you know, some very minor mistakes on this Cody push and it could cost them. And that's just one of the many things. Like, don't go in there against Brock Lesnar when you're gutsy and all, but still, come on.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Very good. Sean, what else?
And I wanted to say too, I thought the show, I've seen some negative feedback on the show as a whole, just like going through social media, which I usually don't do during the show because I don't get to watch Raw live. This is the first time I've called on Raw in like forever. But I thought it was a really good show. I really enjoyed it start to finish. I was never bored through any of it. They kept me engaged throughout. I had stuff they were going to talk about, you know, and they kept going to it. But I wanted to go back to, you know, the Rollins-Seth interviews that you were talking about. I mean, I thought they were really good. They did the best job they could of trying to make this title feel important, even though we know, obviously, it's a step down from Roman's title. It just is. You can't get around that. I wish they wouldn't have done it, but they did. This is where they are. But I think for what they did with Seth and this, even the stuff with AJ, going back and showing the when Seth and AJ wrestled back like almost 20 years ago, what it was, when he was super young, like that was really cool to see that video. I just thought he talked about, I love Roman, but he's an arrogant punk now, basically, and that's why I don't respect him anymore. I thought it was really, really good all the way around. What did you guys think of both the whole interview as a whole? I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, me too. Darren, what do you think?
It succeeded on a couple of levels. One, of building up the championship. As Sean said, as good of a job as they were going to do, because people are going to view that as a secondary belt, of course, but they're doing the right things and trying to establish, you know, trying to show like the two guys fighting for it. So good move there. And the other is they're planting the seeds for Seth to take on Roman down the line at some point. And with these comments about, you know, he's costing people opportunities and that kind of thing. And he doesn't like what the kind of champion Roman has turned into. So you're planting the seeds for that down the line. I could see them facing off at some point. So on two different levels, I think it worked very well.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean, what else?
And then I guess the last thing I'll bring up, and because there's other people, you know, get ready to get on, but I wanted to bring up the contract signing as a whole, because I was wondering what you guys thought. Because I was actually going to look at your report, and I was like, no, I want to get my own opinion, I want to have my own thought, but I knew I was going to talk to you guys anyway about it. But I thought it was, I mean, I thought for a contract signing, it was good. I thought they had good verbal exchanges overall. I mean, they didn't feel forced. I mean, they did feel legitimate both ways. I thought Trish, you know, for what she's going to do on the mic, this is probably the best that she's going to do. And I thought Becky just came out firing with a barking like a dog comment. I kind of cracked up during that one, honestly, even though it was a bad moment for Trish. Yeah, I was like, wow. But I thought it was good. I want to hear what you guys thought about it. And that's really all I got for tonight. I want to get other people on. Wade, I appreciate what you do, man.
Sure.
And even in your with the technical difficulties, and Darren, you guys are – I always appreciate what you guys do for the Torch. Thanks for taking my call.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Always good hearing from you, and fun to hear from you on a Monday night. Yeah, Darren, Trish and Becky, just give your thoughts on that segment. We talked to Mike about it earlier.
Yeah, I thought it was effective. We kind of touched on that a little bit. Both played their characters well. Again, Trish, you know, the bar is not high for her, but she did just enough to antagonize the fans and Becky, and I thought it worked well. I was surprised they brought up the barking like a dog thing, because that's something that they probably don't want to draw too much attention to, of people, you know, trading that clip again on social media and stuff. You don't want that to get out into the mainstream with them trying to attract advertisers again and that kind of thing. I'm really surprised that they would rehash that. But, I mean, it was a good line, sure, but I don't know what they were thinking bringing that up. That's like one of the things they should probably need to keep buried.
Yeah, I think that is a worthwhile critique, because, I mean, it was like, wow, she just said that. And I thought it was inbounds. I think some of the stuff that Trish was doing was meant to be, like, personal and maybe out of bounds, like, to get heat on Trish, you know, making references or inferences to, or I guess implying things about Becky and why she's taking time off and going through things and that kind of thing. And Becky was just sort of like, yeah, people remember you more fondly than the quality of your actual work, which, by the way, I agree with, and that's not a dig at Trish. I just think people did look at Trish because of the contrast of what else was going on. And they saw her as better than she was. And again, she was very good. And had a good run, but I don't know how she would have done if she were moved forward and had to compete with Sasha and Bayley and Becky and Charlotte and, you know, heck, Rhea Ripley these days. I mean, you kind of pick your people beyond the core four of the NXT call-ups. I don't know if she would have been in that top four and even in her prime. So, you know, you say that and it rings true. It doesn't seem mean because Trish is so, you know, snide and snotty in everything that she does. It sort of feels like, all right, fair comment for Becky, and that's going to get under Trish's skin. So, I mean, it made me look forward to the match more and believe that they are getting under each other's skins and that Trish is going places that seems a little out of bounds. And Becky decided to take something that's very public and draw attention to it as a bit of revenge, going, you know, you were part of an era that you can't speak about, you know, paving the way. And if it weren't for me, you wouldn't have the success you've had, when she was part of some pretty tawdry stuff too. So I thought it worked. All right. We will go to Mike in Atlantic City next, and then Ryan from Cumberland, our second onsite correspondent, is waiting. Mike, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
I want to talk about, I guess, first about the whole Cody Brock thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was a big fan of their match at Backlash. I thought it was good. I liked the blood spot. And by the way, wait, that blood spot was done the hard way, right? It was, like, planned. Like, it was a planned thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't – there was, like, no blading involved, right?
Right, yes.
Right, yeah. That's
my understanding, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. I wanted the rematch to be, you know, like, good, too. Like, I'm not a big fan of, you know, this rematch being, like – I kind of don't like the story they're telling, like, where Cody's going into the match – injured with a broken arm and all that, because I feel like the match is going to be one-sided and it's just going to be Lesnar just, you know, beating the heck out of him the whole match, and then Cody will get maybe a few punches in, a clothesline here, and maybe a roll-up win, or, you know, it could be just a squash match. Brock wins with the F5. I'm actually going with Brock to win, actually, I think. And then I think the third match will be their rubber match. That, I think, will be their best match. I think that'll be some type of gimmick match, probably at Money in the Bank. But if they do that, Wade, do you think that means Cody won't be in Money in the Bank? Like, what's your thoughts on that? Because I kind of see Cody in the Money in the Bank match, but at the same time, I think he'll have a match with Lesnar. I don't think they're going to end it this Saturday. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see it extended. Darren, I'm going to throw to you first, though, on that. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm the way we were talking about it earlier, I could see a third match coming out of this and, you know, Cody being gutsy but couldn't quite pull off the win, and then they had the classic in the match number three. As far as Money in the Bank, I'm a little bit torn on that, him carrying a briefcase around. I'm not sure you want to have him in that, but then mm-hmm. does give him a storyline excuse to get another title shot down the line, and if he needs to cross brands to do that, gives you the excuse to do that. So I could see them going either way on that, but I would probably keep him out of it and give somebody else that opportunity that he doesn't necessarily need it.
The awkwardness of the Money in the Bank is if he wins it, does he go, all right, I want Roman, and I'm calling it. I want it at SummerSlam. I want to wait till WrestleMania. Why would he wait till WrestleMania if he can kind of pick and choose his moments? You don't want as a babyface to pick when Roman's down and hurt to go after him. Or does he go after Seth, which doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of matchup. I mean, they have a history, but I don't know that we need to go back to it, and you don't want fans having to pick between them. So to me, I think Money in the Bank's going to somebody else, and I think Cody probably won't even be in the match. And my thinking, just based on what they did tonight, is it's likely they extend the Cody-Lesnar feud beyond Saturday, which is fine. I think there's more to do. They put so much heat on this, and there's no real obvious place for them, either of them, to go afterwards. So that works. That works for me. Mike, anything else on that I didn't answer? Sorry.
No, just want to ask you more about like Cody's run so far. Like,
yeah,
like if he beats Reigns for the title down the road, like because I was talking about this with my friend earlier, and you know he thinks that Cody should beat some more people, you know, besides winning the Rumble and beating Rollins. He thinks that Cody should beat some more people clean and get some more clean wins, like beat Brock, you know, not with a roll-up, but, you know, the Crossroads, and, you know, and beat somebody like Kevin Owens and have some more bigger wins before he would beat Reigns. Like, what are your thoughts on that, like Cody's run so far? Do you think he needs more, like, big matches before he goes into a match with Reigns and like clean big wins over like upper carders instead of like mid carders and all that?
I just don't know how many there are on the Raw roster to choose from. You know, I mean, that one of the issues with, you know, the hard roster split, especially when Drew is out, is I think right now they're babyface heavy. So I guess the question is, do you have Cody go after Gunther? Does that seem like a step down from the world title quest, or is there a good storyline reason to do it? Do you have Cody beat Gunther and end his reign, and that's kind of part of his case for earning a shot or at Reigns, or at least giving him credibility if he wins the Rumble? When I look at the lay of the land, I mean, I just don't see a lot of opponents on the Raw roster for Cody that fits what you're asking for, Mike. Darren, do you have anyone in mind, and what do you think about that, like that being an issue for Cody? Just give him some wins as opposed to just angles and promos and putting up a tough fight against, you know, basically, well, I mean, he had a couple TV matches, but his big feuds have been, you know, Seth and Roman and now Brock.
Right. The first name that came to mind was Drew, because if I'm not mistaken, then they used to be tag team partners, if I'm not mistaken. So you got some history there, and Drew's got to come back at some point. But yeah, it starts thinning out people that the caliber of Cody that would, you know, be credible for him to be in a long-term feud. So what do you do with him? The other thing is, if he's going after Roman and you do it at SummerSlam, at that point, Cody's got to kind of win, I would think. But I don't think they're ready to give up on Roman just yet. So that's a little too soon to me to make that title change, because what was the point of bringing in the secondary belt if you were just going to switch it at SummerSlam? So yeah, that it's kind of a tough road. I guess you could do Gunther at some point, but you got to build him up too. So I don't know if that's necessarily a feud you want to have. So yeah, they've got a little bit of an issue of who to build up. Maybe Bronson Reed or something like that, perhaps giving him a shot to shine.
Yeah, well, good memory with Cody and Drew as a tag team. Winning tag team turmoil many years ago, but they're very different very different in their career, different place in their careers at that point. But I mean, I think if Drew comes back, I think he's better off as a heel, and that might be what they have in mind for him, just given the lay of the land and the balance of the roster right now. And I think Drew could use a spark, and I think he might have a little bit built up also inside, just based on, you know, how things have gone and that he hasn't been protected as a top guy. And others have leapfrogged him, including, by the way, Cody. So there's a built-in storyline there. So to me, Mike, I don't know if I would have, you know, Cody just beat Drew outright as like a stepping stone, but you can absolutely do a feud between those two. And there's a backstory with them having teamed and then, you know, basically Drew being bitter that Cody got signed as a hot free agent. And after going away on his journey like Drew did, and he's the you know, shiny new toy, and Drew got, you know, it was off doing stuff with Sheamus and tag team matches, but kind of tossed to the side or you know, discarded in terms of top-tier opportunities.
Yeah, I was thinking that Cody was going to face Reigns at SummerSlam, but I'm convinced now they're not going to do that match until at least WrestleMania 40. I think they have something else in mind for Cody at SummerSlam. You know, like a Gunther, like, you know, some people say. Yeah, Cody and Gunther, that would be a great match. And Cody versus Drew, I really want to see too. But yeah, WrestleMania 40.
Yeah, I like both of them.
It'll probably happen in I was talking with a fan too earlier. He says they might have Reigns go all out and be champion to WrestleMania 45 and have Cody beat Reigns at WrestleMania 45. And I was like, what? Because I think he's mentioned Bob Backlund, like, has the longest reign. Like, he has like a 5-year reign or something like that. Is it Bob Backlund?
I think Bruno had a longer reign, but the reigns were longer in the 60s and 70s for sure.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know if I see that, but.
Bruno, I looked it up. Bruno's longest reign was 2,800 days. Backlund's was 2,100. Hogan had 1,400. Bruno had another 1,200 day reign in there.
And what was Bob Backlund's?
2,135 days compared to 2,803 for Bruno.
Okay, yeah, so Bruno's got the longest. Okay. Do you think Reigns goes as long as Bruno's? Do you see any chance of that?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I do. Let's see. You need... So we're going on 1,000 days? Is that right?
Yeah.
So it'd be six. So it'd be, roughly 5-6 more years. Yeah. So.
Oh, wow.
I mean, Roman's young enough. I mean, people should put money on it, but it's every 3 years, it's another 1,000 days. So, you know, I mean, it would be a record. Like, here's the thing. If part of why they wanted a second world title is they want Roman to break Bruno's record and they think that'll help keep Reigns around. And engaged, not that he's a, you know, quote, mark for the days, but like it gives him kind of a storyline reason to stick around. But it also gives him a ton of leverage, you know, like negotiating wise, if he's not signed to a 6-year deal, cause they'd be in the middle of this long storyline. I have to give up on it, but I mean, I don't know. I'm not actually totally against that, especially if there's a second world title, which I'm against there being two world titles, but if you're going to have two, might as well have somebody beat Bruno's reign and become the greatest of all time. I could see that being something Roman would think is cool. But again, I mean, he'd be in his 40s by the time that happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you, Wade. I'm a fan of that, too. I know a lot of people probably would hate on that, but, you know, I'm with you. I'm definitely a fan of that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I'm a huge Bloodline fan. I miss the heart of it, though. I miss when Sammy, Usos, and Reigns were, like, all together, strong. That I do miss, though. You know, like, I do.
Well,
Sammy was so great, you know.
I know. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to overstay your welcome with it. I mean, people remember it fondly because it, some people probably did think, I mean, that it went on a little too long, but some of that's just the calendar. But, they certainly could have milked it longer. We've seen that done before in wrestling where something's going really well and they just stick with it too long. And usually it's better when they don't. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Mike, appreciate the call. Yeah.
Thank you. You guys have a great night.
You bet. Darren, how shocked would you be if what Mike just said happened? So Roman he's 37 years old. So he'd be like 43. I mean, he'd still be younger than AJ Styles when that happened.
Right. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but I would be surprised if they did keep it that long because you're going to run out of people. And
well, there's somebody in high school right now who would be a, who would be like his, you know, WrestleMania 44 opponent. I mean, and really this only entails, I mean, the difference between Roman and Bruno, a number of days holding a title, but number of defenses, you know, I mean, if Roman held it for six more years and breaks the record or five more years, he's only going to defend the title like 15 times during that time period. So, he can go do movies and still pop in for title defenses. And, you know, there'll be a lot of heat on him for not defending it often enough, but then there'll be a mega heel at some point, which by the way, could be Cody. And then fans won't hold it against him. He's not defended the title much. They'll just want him to keep it out of the hands of Drew and Cody and Gunther and other heels, whoever is, like I said, whoever's around at that point. All right. Let's go to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. He attended Raw tonight in Hershey, PA. Ryan, thanks for holding. We had our Mike from Hershey call up at the top of the show and give his thoughts attending live. I'm eager to hear your perspective on things. Welcome.
Did he say about what happened at the end of the show? Because that was pretty important, I think, those details.
He brought up Imperium coming back afterwards. Go ahead and talk about that, or if it's something else you're talking about, detail that.
No, that's not one of the things I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is when Cody had his stared out, you know, with Triple H's confrontation. Imperium was really locked into that premise. They really hinted that Gunther is interested in Cody Rhodes to the fans.
Oh,
so that match
oh interesting.
Be coming
okay.
Sooner. I think you're going to see that match sooner than later, based on what I saw tonight.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for that match.
Yeah, and did he say about Ludwig Kaiser getting through a table by Kevin Owens?
Was that after? No, he didn't. I don't. Did he, Darren?
I didn't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah.
Yeah, he took a belly to back suplex through the table. Sound that? That's something they do. Like towards the end of Raw, you click someone has to go through a table because the fans are always cheating. We want tables, so they try to send them home happy by giving them what they want.
Cool. Yeah. What else, Ryan? What else stood out from your experience tonight?
Did he talk much about the main event taping?
He ran it down, but don't worry about what he said. Just kind of give us your perspective on things.
Well, Nikki Cross picked up a win tonight over Emma, so it looks like Emma might not be getting that big of a push going forward if she's losing on main event already, because I believe she was drafted by Raw recently, so she's already losing on a Peacock show. And it looked like Dana Brooke might have suffered some sort of nose injury in her match.
Oh, really?
She's very good at selling. You know, that could be another thing.
Sometimes they fool me.
I have a question on Paul Heyman. He mentioned Hershey was a hellhole. I don't know if that was a shoot or not, because I know Philadelphia is like 82 miles away from Hershey, but I don't remember ECW ever running Hershey. So I don't know if it was because Hershey wouldn't allow ECW to come because of the violence, the blood, or just Paul Heyman had like a run-in with the athletic commission or something, but I think there's maybe a shoot to that comment that he made.
I just he was ripping on, you know, everyone in Pennsylvania. I'm like, come on, Paul, you know where your fan base was during those ECW years. But I think he just wanted to be sure he got booed. I think that's what's going on, Ryan. Is he's, you know, it's the home of ECW, and Paul might get cheered, so he wants to make sure whatever city in Philadelphia is in that he heals on that city and the state. Ladies and gentlemen, and whatever creatures live in Pennsylvania, whatever that line was, and the way he delivered it, it was great. I don't know of any particular history with Hershey, though.
Okay. And I have thoughts on Dominic with his reaction he got tonight. Is it possible he might be winning Money in the Bank? Because I know Kenny and Disco Inferno mentioned that he might be the best pick to win that, because he'll get even more heat carrying around that briefcase every week. Taunting the fans that he said he's the next world champion.
Yeah, I like that. I like Dominic with Money in the Bank much more than Cody. That and he can, you know, hopefully do more with it than Austin Theory had a chance to. What do you think of that, Darren?
Yeah, now that's perfect to have him. I mean, you're going to add mega heat with him carrying that briefcase and then teasing every once in a while. And if he comes up short, it doesn't affect him that much. So that's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I like that. Ryan, what else? What else stood out tonight for you?
Finn Balor stood out as possibly a first in line for a championship match against either Seth Rollins, who's the favorite, or AJ Styles if he pulls up the upset. I know, like on house shows, like in Charleston, there's a match between Finn Balor and Seth Rollins, but it doesn't say world title because he hasn't won world championship yet. But I imagine that's going to be the main event of the show, so it makes sense that that would be a world title match. And we might see that carry over to Money in the Bank too, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, they need to build people up, and Damian Priest and Finn Balor are important singles heels in the landscape of Raw going forward. You know, he's, you know, when we talk about Cody getting big wins, Priest came out of the Bad Bunny match with his stock raised, and I think Finn Balor has a spring in his step these days with, you know, what he's been doing after the heel turn. It just seems like he feels a little more vigor, he's a little more renewed as a character. So, yeah, and I think, you know, beating Nakamura even with help from Priest is a signal that they might be trying to build him up. What else, Ryan?
Did your on-site correspondent say about it? I think he got a really nice reaction for this mid-carder. Like, I was really surprised by how much the fans reacted to his offense when he was tagged in. They even said, "We went Otis" when Chad Gable was in the ring. So I was sort of impressed by how the crowd reacted to his match.
Who else got the biggest pops of the night? I'm not surprised Otis got a response. People are into him. We hear that pretty consistently. But how do you rank the top two, three crowd pops of the night?
I'd say the top one was Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Matt Riddle. But they have a huge disadvantage over everyone else because Matt Riddle, I believe, is from the area. I believe he was from Allentown, Pennsylvania, which isn't that far from Hershey, maybe like an hour and a half to 2 hours at the most. I'm not familiar with this area, but I would put my money on that's about what the distance is between those cities. So I think that gave him a pretty nice, perhaps some people in the audience knew who he was personally, and they came up to see him.
How'd you, Ryan, how'd you feel about the video packages and how much action was in front of you versus having to watch on the screen?
One of the things I was disappointed was they had that giant like camera that was like the crane, so it's sort of hard to see a lot of the action in the video packages. I don't know if I see the same video packages that you see, but I know people were disappointed that Seth Rollins was not in the arena because it sort of implied he was going to be there, and then it was a video package interview.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people want to see things in person, especially ring entrances, like we talked about earlier with Seth and Cody. But did it seem like it was testing your patience in terms of how much you weren't able to see?
I think people were into like the Cody Brock that got a huge reaction anytime we saw that backstage segment. That was the one that stuck out, and it sort of did, you know, Night of Champions over and over again. That got a little boring, those video packages.
Darren, is there anything you want to ask Ryan?
What kind of t-shirts did you see in the crowd? Was there like an overwhelming favorite?
There wasn't really an overwhelming favorite. I saw a lot of old school shirts like WrestleMania 3 shirts. I saw Cody shirts. I saw Judgment Day shirts. They're just like some shirts you wouldn't expect to see because they were so like old school, you know, so I guess people really hold on to. I saw an Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan WrestleMania 6 shirt, I believe. It was either 6 or 7, because I know they were key matches that year, so it was either a 6 or 7 WrestleMania shirt.
Very good. Ryan, anything else you want to bring up about what you experienced tonight at the show?
I don't know if the on-site correspondent mentioned that arena was pretty much full. There might have been just a few empty seats. It might have been a legit sellout tonight. And every time I've gone to Hershey, it's been a good crowd, but it's never been that full. But then again, Brock Lesnar was on advertised for the show, so I think that really boosted the attendance tonight.
Yeah, we've been hearing that often, that the crowds are bigger in certain cities than fans have seen ever or in a long time for some of these shows. So that's why, you know, I say, who knows, maybe Roman is still champion in 5 years. Just if things are going well, why shake things up? Ryan, I appreciate your thoughts on attending tonight.
Yeah, what makes it even more impressive is I believe Hershey has a population of about 14,000 people, so over half the population.
That's crazy. Wow. I mean, obviously some people drove in from elsewhere, but that's still amazing. Yeah, I mean, it was the thing to do tonight in Hershey.
Harrisburg's just down the road, and that's like around 40-some thousand, but still that's not a major city compared to Pittsburgh or Philadelphia.
Right, yeah, yeah. Cool. All right, Ryan, thanks. Always good hearing from you. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Okay. I'll hear from me maybe next week because I'm attending SmackDown in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania on Friday of next week.
Oh, great. Yeah, drop me another email to give me a heads up on that too.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
You bet. All right, we're running along here, but I want to get in a few emails as we head toward the finish line here. And we will start here with David Wolf, who says, I believe Brock's beatdown of Cody in the opening segment was sufficient for storytelling purposes and that the second was excessive and gave away the finish to Saturday's match. Coming out of the opening segment, I still believe that Cody could fight through the injury and might still defeat Brock on Saturday. After Brock applied the Kimura later on, that was no longer the case. In terms of kayfabe, Brock is assured a victory. There's no way anyone is beating Brock 5 days after that level of attack. Outside the land of kayfabe, going after the arm a second time made it obvious they're protecting Cody because he's doing the job Saturday. I'd also like to know Becky Lynch was on fire tonight. You've done things that would give me nightmares, a specific callback to barking for Vince. Spectacular stuff. Darren, yeah, did they go too far in David, you know, as David expressed, maybe giving away this is the excuse for Cody to lose? He's going into a match that he might not even be medically cleared for. Does that take away a hook for Saturday afternoon's event?
Not necessarily. I mean, because there could always be, you know, you could bring in a chair or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly a good point that perhaps it is leaning towards them giving a storyline excuse. But, I mean, it's WWE. As they always say, anything can happen. So, you know, any kind of distraction, maybe Brock is going to be spun off into a new feud and somebody attacks him or something. So and there's still, you know, a chance for something to happen.
All right, I'm next. Alan in Cambridge, Ontario says, I just have to say something about Seth Rollins. During John Cena's promo to Austin Theory before Mania, Cena said when Theory speaks, no one believes him or what he's saying. I think that criticism is more appropriate for Seth when he's in the ring delivering a promo. Listening to him in these Raw sit-down interviews, he sounds like a regular, normal person. That, to me, is who he is. When he does a promo in the ring, his cackling laugh, his speech cadence, it just seems so authentic. Seth can dance to the ring all he wants. The crowd enjoys it, but I wish his promo style would be more authentic. His in-ring promo character isn't much better than Broken Matt Hardy, and I hated Broken Matt Hardy. More of the Seth we got in these interviews would help get him to be accepted as a top-tier wrestler for me. Thanks for the great podcast. Darren, what do you think about that? Is this a portal of sorts for Seth to get, you know, still do the bombastic ring entrances with, you know, he can cackle, he can dance, he can wear outfits, but this has shown the grounded Seth that we've seen before in different contexts. But, you know, if he's going to be a world champion, he wants to be the man who was never pegged to be the guy, which has made him hungrier, as a result. I mean, this is all very relatable comments from Seth done in a fashion that, as David points out, or as Alan pointed out, is very human-like as opposed to sports entertainer over the top like.
Right, and I'm not a fan of all the cackling and stuff. I think it's really silly. This takes me back to when Seth was in that feud with Matt Riddle, and they had kind of the sit-down interview, and they pretended like the camera had gone off, and then Seth went into, you know, he was like kind of calling out Matt Riddle and trying to rile him up, And I was like, now that's the seriousness that we need to see from Seth Rollins to take him seriously. But of course they reverted right back to the cackling the next week or whatever. But this format allows him to do that, and you had the best of both worlds. So I would continue if you could do these kind of things. But also I noticed that Corey Graves' entire voice changes on these things also. He doesn't sound like the same person. And I think it helps him as well when he's being more serious and asking important questions and stuff. So it's a benefit for him as well.
All right. Doug Saylor of Surrey, BC, Canada says, so Cody has a possible broken arm and comes out to face Brock so he can hurt his arm more? Sigh. Why can't we have smart baby faces? Was that Vince's booking decision? Proud to be a VIP member for more than 10 years. Thank you, Doug. I don't know that I think it's, I understand that we're getting some emails and comments criticizing it. And I get, like, as you said at the top, maybe it's pushing it a little, like in terms of being like this Superman push and it's a little much, but it is kind of, I mean, Cody went out and wrestled with that just discolored pectoral, you know, the whole chest area. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm not as against it, even though all the criticism coming its way crossed my mind. And I think there is always with Cody a need to be cognizant of crossing the line. He's always in a danger zone because of what we saw in AEW. And the bad memories of Super Cena and Roman being pushed at the babyface and fans booing him. You don't want to go there until you're intending to go there. So, but I'm just not sensing today's WWE audience is just waiting to cheer Brock and boo Cody. It's not going to happen in Saudi Arabia. Those fans tend to go with a program and follow, you know, the storyline reactions. And I think Cody's been, if you're going to do this, he's done it in a way that I think is avoiding most of the temptation to just go, you know, get over yourself or this is too much. I'm not sensing that right now. And if I was, I would certainly say so. You know, the idea that Cody just doesn't know what's good for him and he just wants to fight and he just can't be held back. I mean, I think that can work, but it is walking up to the line of too much, but I don't think it's crossed it, Darren. How about you?
No, it's not yet anyway. So, I mean, you can still roll with that, but, you know, kind of as I alluded to before, just be really careful with that. Use it sparingly. But no, they haven't overdone it quite yet because, I mean, fans are super into it. So, I mean, you can still ride that out.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up with this. JB from Detroit says, is there any point in Raquel and Shotzi winning the tag titles? I don't honestly see too much chemistry between the two, and it seems like another random team thrown together. I think the better call would be to let Raquel have a strong singles run at this point. I'm fine. I actually thought Shotzi and Raquel had some chemistry. I mean, Shotzi's a little much for me. Like, I'm not quite sure I could exist in the same room with her for too long before needing to go, like, get some fresh air. But that's her gimmick, you know? I mean, they frame her. What's the catchphrase they use over and over on her, about her? Do you remember, Darren?
Oh, geez. No, I don't recall.
Yeah. Like, you know, just bold and in your face. I don't know. You know, something like that. This is why they repeat things, because then we remember. I'm fine with it. I mean, you know, it was a little syrupy the way that they, you know, united. But I didn't think Liv and Raquel had, you know, particularly good chemistry, but that's because Liv is just so awkward and everything that she was trying to do. And, you know, they're perpetually searching for a gimmick for her. I don't want to pick on her when she's down here and injured, but I think maybe some time off might be good, but maybe she's always just going to act like AI gone wrong, of like trying to portray a baby face smiling, female wrestler. I mean, she just seems almost human-like, but not quite. And now I really am ripping on her. I hope her time away helps her kind of hit the reset button a little bit and come back different. But Raquel and Shotzi, I think works. I think the energy there is actually a little more contrasting in a way that might work. What do you think, Darren?
Yeah, they seem to want Raquel to be in these tag teams where, you know, she's kind of like the straight man. And then you have like the wacky tag team partner. And this fits that mold, and I thought that they played off well of each other, and it was kind of mirrors the team with Raquel and Liv. So yeah, I think it's fine. I could see them winning the belt, and that wouldn't be too out of place either.
Yeah. All right. Up next, he says, I'm not sure that Seth, in Seth's interview, that it was the best idea to frame it as Roman taking away opportunities from other wrestlers. To me, that comes across as whiny and a loser's mindset. And in kayfabe, how is Roman taking away opportunities by winning? Winning allows him the leverage to negotiate a better deal. Well, I think Seth's point is he is going to defend the title often, and Roman defends it as little as possible. And in a just sort of, you know, storyline sense, and I like that word better than, like, kayfabe, you know, because kayfabe is like pretending it's real. Storyline is just, you know, what's the story you're telling, and does the story that you're telling fit the progression and how the characters are acting? And I think it does. I mean, Seth's like, I'm going to be a fighting champion. There's going to be a reign people can be proud of. And that's different than Roman picking his spots and using that leverage. I don't think it's whiny. I think it's more Seth trying to tout what his reign will be like. As we talk, by the way, as we talk about this, like it's fait accompli. Is it like, is Seth for sure winning? Darren, do you think, or you think there's a chance AJ wins and they actually, you know, Seth has to, you know, unseat Styles at SummerSlam or something?
I can't see them doing that. I think it's Seth, and people want to see that, and there's no sense prolonging it. Go ahead and give him the belt. It makes all the sense in the world, but it's WWE. They'll swerve you, but I don't see a sense in giving AJ the belt.
Yeah.
And bringing him over from SmackDown to Raw and that whole silliness.
Yeah. How about the opportunity thing that JV brought up?
Yeah, it's, I thought it was all about Roman not, and never defending the belt. So that's what I think that's what Seth was referencing. Because, I mean, like you said, he could drag this thing out 4 years and it would be 15 title defenses. So he only 15 title defenses. So yeah, I think that's what he's referring to.
And finally, does KO, Sammy and Riddle, does that team seem out of place to you at this point? It made sense when they were all opposing the Bloodline, as they all had a history there, but for it to continue seems a bit random. As always, love the show and go VIP. I think it's fine. I mean, it doesn't make sense to do more of it. I thought it was interesting there, the video package on Riddle, you know, showing him working out and talking, you know, having some, you know, just making various comments about, I don't know, it just seemed like they were preparing people for him to be pushed as a singles challenger, whether it's to Gunther or feuding with some other top heel. Darren, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's the impression I got too. I think they've taken the Sammy, KO, and Riddle tag teams about as far as they can, and this is kind of a signal that, yeah, we're going to be splitting them off soon, and, you know, don't forget all of his, you know, spectacular moves, and showed them in a more serious light, which I'm always a fan of. So, I think that's a good signal that he's going to be splitting off soon.
Yeah, yep. That worked for me. Darren, is there anything else you want to bring up from Raw that you might have in your notes or made a mental note to bring up?
I think we covered everything that I have noted.
Yeah. I'm just kind of looking at the lineup, make sure nothing jumps out. Yeah. I think we got it covered too. So sounds very good. So check out Darren Lilly's Impact Reports at pwtorch.com. Go VIP to hear him and John talk about Impact on a VIP podcast. Darren, anything else you want to bring up before we sign off?
No, if you want to find me on Instagram, you can find me at DKLSTL. And thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks to our callers, our emailers, our on-site correspondents, and we'll talk to you all next time.